And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
It's 11:08. Welcome to the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari, program 68, Lisa Wolf. And this may be our one-year anniversary. I'm not sure.
It might be. We'll have to ask our mathematician
friends. We started
friends.
Last year on April 12th.
Yep.
This is April 10th. So
that counts.
This very well could be our one-year anniversary of the WGN Radio Theater. So congratulations.
Yeah, where's the party?
We're still here.
That's
it's been
true.
A whole year.
That's true.
52 weeks.
And many more years to come, we hope.
Program 68. And this evening, all the way to 2 o'clock in the morning, we have a spotlight on Jim and Marion Jordan. They were married in real life, Jim and Marion Jordan, for many, many years. They were, of course, best known as Fibber McGee and Molly. But Jim and Marion Jordan appeared on other shows, either as themselves or as Fibber McGee and Molly. And we have three radio shows. One is the Fibber McGee and Molly show. And then Suspense, Jim and Marion Jordan star in Backseat Driver. And then they appear as Fibber McGee and Molly on The Great Gildersleeve. So quite a fun lineup of programming on this edition of the WGN Radio Theater, brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
In the drama Born to be Blue, this actor stars as jazz musician Chet Baker, known as the Prince of Cool.
All right, what do they win?
Oh, they're going to win a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, the best deep dish pizza.
All right, the number to call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Now, here's a hint. He is talking to Denzel Washington in a scene here from Training Day.
Give me that thing. I'll smoke it, man. Give it to me. You want me to smoke it, I'll smoke it.
All right, yeah? Let him smoke it, he'll smoke it, Lisa.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
All right, you're smoking.
Thanks, Carl.
All right,
I'll take it as a compliment.
We'll find a winner when they call 312-981-7200 right after this break. I didn't get to say hello to Mike Estella, our executive producer.
Hi, how's it going?
And also Dan Long, the best in the business, our producer there in the booth.
Yes, sir.
All right, we're ready to rock now,
okay,
Lisa.
Okay, now it's good. We are here. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing my favorite game, Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip again.
Give me that thing. I'll smoke it, man. Give it to me. You want me to smoke it, I'll smoke it.
Is it truly your favorite game in the whole world?
Yeah, it's my favorite game.
Okay.
I said it was. It is.
Well, does Chris know the answer?
I don't know. Chris from Joliet.
Yeah, I think that's Ethan Hawke.
You are right. And guess what? You are a big winner because you have won my very favorite pizza, which is Lou Malnati's, a $25 gift certificate, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. And in case you don't know what they offer, you can check out their menu and location at loumalnatis.com. Hey, Chris, thanks so much for listening and for calling in.
Thanks for the delicious gift.
Thank you.
All right, Lisa Wolf, this is our one-year anniversary. I'm pretty sure of that.
Do I get
gifts? I'm going to go on the record, as
okay.
they say, and say,
do you bear gifts? Chocolate, anything?
Dan, you know what happens when I buy Lisa a gift. She takes it back.
I don't return
Every
chocolate.
Single thing I've ever given her, she takes it back.
That's so not true. He's making
She's
this
such
up.
A,
oh,
shouldn't she
wait.
Give you something that you took back, though?
Thank you.
I don't think so.
Around Christmas time?
Like everything.
Oh.
Yeah.
Really? The last thing, I got her an Oakley jacket. Now, we're talking, that's a nice present, right? An Oakley jacket. And she was like, oh, this is really nice. And then the next time she shows up, she's like, look what I got with, when I returned your Oakley jacket.
It was an Oakley vest because the jacket didn't flatter my feminine figure.
Mike didn't return the Oakley jacket.
Yeah,
I wear it all the time.
Figure.
And see, I have an Oakley. I have an Oakley
and
jacket on.
And you look
right
very
now.
Handsome.
I think Oakley should sponsor this show.
I think he should work on that.
All right, we will. But right now, we're going to spotlight Jim and Marion Jordan. They were Fibber McGee and Molly, and I have an episode for you from 1940. They came to radio in 1935. They were natives of Peoria, Illinois. Did you know that, Lisa? Right here in Illinois. They lived on the series at 79 Wistful Vista in Wistful Vista, USA. The show was written by Don Quinn, and many, many of the townspeople would visit Fibber McGee and Molly. They'd ring their doorbell at 79 Wistful Vista. One of them was Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve, played by Hal Perry, and he spun off for his own radio show, which we're going to have one a little later in the program, but also Wallace Wimple and Mayor Latrivia and Doc Gamble. And one of the running gags on the show was Fibber's Hall Closet. He would open a closet door, and all this junk would just pile out. There'd be all these sound effects.
Yeah, that reminds me of your closet.
Yeah, because on my refrigerator. Yeah. My refrigerator, too.
Yeah.
Actually, this show, Fibber McGee and Molly, had two spinoffs. It had The Great Gildersleeve and also Beulah, which was their maid,
right.
And that spun off into its own show. So let's go back now to April 16th, 1940. Fibber spills ink on the rug. Here's Jim and Marion Jordan in part one of Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. The makers of Johnson's Wax, Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat, present Marion and Jim Jordan as Fibber McGee and Molly, with Bill Thompson, the King's Men, and Billy Mills Orchestra. Well, today, folks, we enter 79 Wistful Vista right along with the master of the house. As he opens the front gate, we follow close behind. As he runs up the porch steps, so do we. As he opens the front door, we also slip in. And as he kisses his waiting wife, we find Fibber McGee and Molly.
Hi, Molly.
Hello, dearie. What are you hiding behind your back? Let me see.
Oh, nothing much. Just a few flowers. Here.
Oh, a bouquet of roses.
Yeah.
Ah, they're so lovely.
Oh, it wasn't anything that any red blood...
McGee, what have you been up to?
Well, what you mean, Molly?
Well, you know very well what I mean, McGee.
Huh?
When a man brings his wife flowers for no reason, there's a reason.
Look, Mrs. McGee, this is an anniversary. Just 5 years ago today, on the 16th of April, we went on the air for Johnson's Wax.
Oh, heavenly days.
Yeah.
For the purposes of the script, imagine me forgetting that.
Yes, sir, imagine us talking ourselves red in the network every Tuesday night for 5 years.
Do you remember that first broadcast in New York, McGee?
Oh, boy, was that terrible.
And what we overheard one of the NBC vice presidents saying afterwards?
What did he say?
He said, well, Bill, they just hatched a turkey in Studio H. But he says it won't live till Thanksgiving.
Ah, well, I knew we could make a go of it. I had faith.
Yes, you did.
I sure did.
It took three options to get you to move out of that tourist camp.
Come in, by all means.
Hello there, Johnny. Hello, daughter. Telegram for you. Sign here.
Oh, thanks, old-timer.
Who's the wire from, McGee?
Oh, boy, the president of one of the big film companies.
Oh.
Rodney Goldbugle, head of 19th Century Wolf.
Really? What does it say?
Says, my staff feels that after 5 years on radio, you have tremendous box office possibilities.
Oh.
Stop. But I don't think so, and that's that. Signed, Goldbugle.
Wonder he didn't send it collect.
He did!
What?
Hey!
Well, freeze my lagoon and call me Sonia.
That does it, Johnny. That absolutely does it. Freeze my lagoon and call me Sonia. That's going too far.
Why, what do you mean, Mr. Oldtimer?
Look, daughter, for 5 years now, rain or shine, fair weather and foul, week in, week out, I've been coming here to listen to your husband's bum jokes. Just so I could tell him the way I heard it. Hoping and praying that maybe I could improve your sense of humor. But I give up. I'm through. I wash my hands of the whole business. So long, kid. See you next week.
Why, that old spindle shank, if he thinks for a minute...
The way I heard it, one feller says to t'other feller...
All the way!
Listen, McGee, don't you think it would be nice if we thanked the sponsor for our lovely 5 years of work?
Say, that ain't a bad idea, Molly. I'll call him up long distance.
Oh, wonderful.
Give me the phone. Hello, operator. I want S.C. Johnson & Son, Incorporated, Racine, Wisconsin. Yeah. Oh, the moon shines tonight, son. Hello, Racine. Oh, is that you, Mert?
Oh.
How's every little thing, Mert? It is, huh? What say, Mert? Your brother? The one that's in the Navy, huh? Oh, lost at sea, huh?
Oh, that's Tip.
No, it ain't, Molly. They was just trying to teach him the Morse code. He learned A and B all right, but he always got lost at sea. Oh. What's Amert? Oh, they're closed up, huh? Oh, well, never mind. Racine will probably call us after this show. So long, Mert.
Say, why don't you write him a letter, McGee?
That's a good idea. Where's my pen?
Right there in the desk.
Nice. Oh, here it is. Oh.
Now, what's the matter?
This pen, it's empty again.
It is no such a thing. You just filled it yesterday.
Oh, well, I guess it'll be all right if I just shake it, I guess. Just clogged up on the... Whoops.
Oh, McGee, look what you did. You got a big gob of ink right in the middle of the carpet.
Now, how do you suppose that happened? All I done was shake the pen like this and... Whoops, Dad, rat it, there she goes again.
All right, dearie, give it one more squirt. We might as well make this work. No, okay. No, I didn't mean that.
Gee, that's an awful terrible-looking spot, ain't it? Better get some salt and milk quick, Molly.
Salt and milk? What's that for?
Why, that's the best way to take the spot out. You see, the principle is, Molly, that the salt absorbs the ink, and when it dries, you just brush it away.
Oh, then what's the milk for?
It's to get the salt wet. If it ain't wet, how can it dry?
Well, I'll try anything. Now, don't monkey with that spot until I get back. I don't want to have to...
Ah, oh, dear. Come in.
Hi, mister. You want to go fishing, huh?
No. No, I don't want to go fishing.
Oh, come on. It's fun. I got the net and everything.
Hey, that ain't a fish net you've got there. That's a hair net.
I know.
Well, what kind of fish you expect to get in a hair net?
Herring.
Sis, don't...
Oh, don't you want to go home, don't you?
No, I don't you. Now, run along. I'm busy here trying to get an ink spot out of the carpet.
How?
Milk and salt.
Honest?
Yeah.
How?
I just spread the salt on the spot and pour milk all over it.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Well, don't you believe me?
Yeah. And the way it works... I suppose the salt makes the ink spot so thirsty, it drinks too much milk and gets the stomach ache, and when it rolls over, you pull the carpet out from under it. Horse feather, says I. More milk, McGee.
Okay.
Now some more salt. Bring it around here.
Okay.
Dear. Heavenly days, the more I do to it, the worse it looks. McGee, I could just spank you for making all this trouble.
I don't blame you, Molly. If we weren't going to have spare ribs for supper, I'd put myself to bed without any. I'm naughty.
Oh, no, you're not.
I am, too. I'm bad. Boy, look at this room. I ain't been in personal contact with so much salt since I got shot out of that watermelon patch in 1912.
Pour some more milk over in Mexico there, McGee.
Mexico?
Yeah, south of the border.
Okay. There she goes. Hey, look, Molly. I got an idea. Where's there a pair of scissors?
What do you want scissors for?
Well, the best way to get stains out is to neutralize them, see?
Go on. Maybe we're finally getting somewhere.
Why, sure. Now, to neutralize the stain, you first got to know what the stain is chemically.
Oh.
So, the logical thing is to take a sample of the stain to a chemist. You following me?
Yes, and if you stop again, I'll run over you. Go on.
So, I had a sudden inspiration. I'll cut that spot out of the carpet, take it to a good chemist. Oh, that'd leave a hole in the carpet, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. Even at that, I'm not so sure it isn't a smarter idea than this salt and milk business. Look at it. Take a look at it. This living room's a foot deep in salt.
What say we bust 50 dozen eggs in here and set fire to the joint? Boy, what an omelet. Would I ever go to... Maybe that's the milkman. I call him up to run over here special. Come in. Ooh, how do you do, Mrs. Uppington?
Oh, come, Mr. McGee. Don't be so formal. Hi.
You seem in wonderful spirits today, Mrs. Uppington. Your eyes are just sparkling.
Oh, that's because I mislaid my glasses someplace. Did I leave them here the last time I visited?
Well, I don't think so, Uppy. I like you better without them anyway.
Yes, you do?
Yeah. Well, what you got, a pygmistrism?
No. That's a stigma prism, McGee.
Well, whatever it is, it's most inconvenient without them. Why, just now the wind blew my hat off, and after I chased it for 2 blocks, I found I was pursuing Mr. Gildersleeve's bantam rooster.
Well, now we know which came first, the hen or the rooster.
You know, without my glasses, my eyes are so bad that I actually see a great big black spot in the center of your rug.
Well, that's an ink spot I spilled on the carpet, Uppy.
Ink spot?
Ink spot.
Oh, yes. Well, but what's all that white foam?
Milk and salt, Mrs. Uppington. We had a vague idea that was supposed to take out the ink stain.
Yeah. Oh, it does, my dear. It does.
It does?
Yes. Why, that's what we always used back in the days when I worked in the laundry. That's what my maid told me.
Ah, Mrs. Uppington, you certainly ironed that slip out in a hurry.
Ah, but don't worry, Uppy. Molly and I don't mind if we mingle with a mango minder.
And it's more to your credit, Abigail, if you wiggled your way up the social ladder on your own hook.
Hook and ladder Uppington, she was known as.
Now, please, Mr. McGee, really, it's all very well to joke, but remember, I'm not admitting anything. After all, I came from one of the oldest families in this state.
Is that so?
Yes. My father, the late Titus J. Bigglesworth, was the founder of Bigglesworth's Wet Wash. Oh, my goodness. Excuse me. I just remembered an appointment. Oh, my goodbye.
And that is the first portion of Fibber, McGee, and Molly. We're spotlighting Jim and Marion Jordan on this edition of the WGN Radio Theater. We'll be here till 2 o'clock in the morning. We'll get back to Fibber, McGee, and Molly in just a few minutes. Let's take a break, and then it's more. All right, we're back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. This is where we play all your favorite classic radio shows. We're in the midst of tuning in to Fibber, McGee, and Molly. We'll get back to it in just a few moments. Before we do, though, I want to say hello to a good friend of mine, Teresa Goble. And you know what? We found all of Chicago's licensed real estate broker. If you need a real estate broker and are living in the city, you should be talking to Teresa. Hi, Teresa. How are you?
Hi, Carl. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. And you
Hi,
know
Lisa.
What? The name of her company is At Properties. They're at 212 East Ohio Street. And if you're looking for a home, or do you sell also commercial real estate as well, or just mostly homes?
Mostly residential real estate.
All right. Yes. So in the city and in the suburbs as well, or mostly in the city?
In the suburbs, but mostly in the city.
All right. So this is the girl you want. And you know what? If you are able to tune into WGNradio.com, you'll see a very, very attractive woman. You're a beautiful woman. You did some, like... modeling in your... You had to have done some modeling in your career,
Oh, you're going to bring
career,
that up,
right?
Are you?
Right, you had to. Were you a Miss Something or Other at some point in your career?
I had a title down in the South, yes.
What was it? Come on.
No, I can't think of it now.
We're embarrassing her. Yeah, no. She's like a...
Miss,
I don't know.
It was
Miss Full Throttle magazine.
Okay, that's... Hey.
Yeah. It's been a few years.
You know what? I can understand why. So, but getting back to the real estate game... You've been doing this a while. You're a licensed broker, and you really know the city and the suburbs. And folks, if you're looking for a real estate agent, this is the girl, right, Lisa?
Yeah, I mean, we know her to be honest and have a lot of integrity, which I know is important.
Thank you.
But what I always say is knowledge is power, and I want to know how you stay up, you know, to date with the latest topics in real estate. What could you do for me?
I tell you, we get a lot of our information from the MLS.
The Multiple Listing
Multiple
Service.
Multiple Listing Service, yes. And we have training courses at properties. We do a lot of continuing education as well.
Very good. All right. So what you want to do, let's say I wanted to buy a home right now. I'm looking to buy a home, but I don't have a lot of money to put down. So what do I do? What would you suggest I do?
Get a job.
Get a second job.
Right. You have to have, you have to have an income coming in to qualify for a loan.
What is the minimum people put down now on homes? What's that looking like?
You can put as little as 5% down.
5%? Mm-hmm. Not bad.
Mm-hmm.
So
but
I can buy something around 20 grand then, I guess. Right.
I can put you in touch with mortgage brokers.
What can I get for $20,000?
For $20,000, you can get a parking space.
Really? I don't have a car, so I can't park it. So at properties, how long have you been with them?
Almost a year now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So how do people get a hold of you?
They can call my cell phone, actually.
Okay.
Directly.
Your cell phone. You're willing to give your cell phone
I'm willing
phone
to give my cell phone out.
All
right. It's all over the internet anyway.
Go right
so
ahead.
No fear.
What is it?
It's 312-771-8508.
Once again, it is
312-771-8508.
Yeah, I just want to remind everybody, this is Teresa Goebel from At Properties, and we will post this information on our Facebook page. So if you missed it or you weren't able to grab a pen and write it down, we will send it out for you and post her picture because Carl says she's beautiful.
She's a beautiful woman.
Beautiful.
You know, really and truly, if you're looking for a real estate
agent,
we've found the girl for you. Call Teresa Goebel. Once again, your cell phone.
312-771-8508. And they can also reach me by email, which is my first and last name, Teresa Goebel at properties.com.
And spell your last name.
G-O-E-B as in boy, E-L.
That's what I had written down here.
Yeah.
Not bad.
You got it right.
All right. Not bad for third grade
education.
All right. Let's get back. Nice seeing you, Teresa.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Let's get back now to this 1940 episode of Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
Woman. She sure dresses up fit to kill, don't she, Molly?
Yeah, she does. At least that coat certainly looked like a shooting jacket. But now this isn't getting the sink stain taken out, McGee. Are you sure salt and milk is the best way?
Absolutely, and I think it's working, too. You can't see the stain, can you?
Can't even see the carpet. Now, let me think. I believe the stain was over here someplace. Wait till I scrape the salt away.
Oh, there it is.
Look at it. I thought the wet salt was supposed to absorb the stain.
Maybe we should have used buttermilk. Well, here, let's put on some more salt.
Now some more milk.
Yeah, some more.
I think we better go upstairs and put our bathing suits on, McGee. It's getting pretty deep.
Telegram for Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
Here, boy. Stay where you are and don't track that salt and milk all over. McGee, splash over there and take the telegram.
Where's the telegram, Bud?
Well, I'm supposed to sing it to you, Mr. McGee.
Dear, oh, dear.
Okay, my epistolary Pagliacci. What's happening?
Why, sure. Happy anniversary to you. Happy anniversary to you. Happy anniversary, dear Fibber, McGee, and Molly. Presented by the makers of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's Self-Polishing Blow Coat, the no-rubbing, no-buffing floor polish that shines as it dries in 20 minutes and saves hours of housework. Happy anniversary to you.
Kate Smith Wilcox. He could have left off that Chautauqua finish. That guy can squeeze himself in more places than a fat lady with a new girdle.
Now, look, McGee, if we're going on with this milk and salt treatment, we're going to need more milk. We're down to the last 7 bottles.
7 bottles? Oh, I think we got enough on there now. All we got to do is let it dry now and then brush it off.
Let it dry? This mess won't be dry before Labor Day.
I'll answer it, Molly. I'll get it. Oh.
Oh. Heavenly days. Oh. Oh, dear.
Oh, boy. Fell right in the milk. If I only had some cornflakes.
Well, don't lay there. Get up out of it and answer the door.
Okay.
Ah, good day, my dear, and good day. The good humor man, isn't it?
No, it ain't the good humor man, Boomer.
That isn't a white suit, Mr. Boomer. He fell in the milk.
Is that so? Yeah. Fell in the milk. Must be studying to be a human fly. But what, may I inquire, is the cause of all this lactic lavishness and the surrealistic salinity?
What? Huh? Well, if you must know, Boomer, I spilled some ink on the carpet and we're trying to get it out.
What a coincidence. I have with me the famous old Boomer recipe for removing stains from carpets. I take it there is a carpet under all this waffle batter.
Yes, there is. And let's see your stain-removing recipe, Mr. Boomer. We're desperate enough to try anything.
Certainly. Only charge you a small fee for the service. Now let me see. Where did I put Grandma Boomer's stain-removing recipe? recipe. Here's a small address book. Call it my lollipop ledger. Sucker list, you know. Here's a letter from an old cellmate of mine, getting paroled next week and wants me to meet him outside the gates with a horse and buggy. Poor old Archibald. Has he been in that long? There's an advertising circular of the Dodge station wagon. Beautiful car, but not for me. All my life, I've had to dodge station wagons. It's a passport photo of my brother Burbank. Looks like a criminal, doesn't he? Why not? Rabbit's foot with a fallen arch. Aha, and a sign of spring, a check for a short bark beer. Well, imagine that, no recipe.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
Bobby would have been too technical for young Lima Bean here to have handled anyway, my dear.
Oh, yeah? I have you know, Boomer, that I know as much about handy stuff about the house as anybody.
Oh, is that so?
Yes, that's so. Why, even as a kid, Boomer, I used to spend all my dough for some little gadget to make my mother's work easier.
Oh.
Why, buying things for that house used to keep me broke. House Broke McGee, I was known as. House Broke McGee, the hale and hearty handyman, heaving and hauling hunks of heavy hickory to hurl on the hearth to help Hannah. Hannah was the hired housemaid. Happily humming a heady hay and a hidey ho about it takes a heck of a heap of hokum to make a house a home. Whooping and hollering as a handily hemmed a handful of hankies or hammered a handle on a hardwood high boy. Haggling with hucksters about a hat full of honeydews and hitting the hay with these words in my ears. Have I handled this hooey for 5 long years?
The King's Men sing Mad Dogs and Englishmen.
In tropical climes or certain times of day, when all the citizens retire to tear their clothes off and perspire, it's one of those rules that the greatest fools obey. Because the sun is much too sultry, and one must avoid its ultraviolet ray. Papa-lock-a-boo, papa-lock-a-papa-lock-a-papa-lock-a-boo, digger-rigga-digger-rigga-digger-rigga-doo, digger-rigga-digger-rigga-digger-rigga-doo, the natives grieve when the white men leave their huts. Because they're obviously, definitely nuts.
Ho, ho, ho.
Mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun. The Japanese don't care to. The Chinese wouldn't dare to. The Hindus and Argentines sleep firm and can go out till one. But Englishmen detest a siesta. In the Philippines, there are lovely screens to protect you from the glare. In the Malay states, they have hats like plates which the British shores won't wear. At 12 noon, the natives swoon and know for the work is done. But mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun. Mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun. The toughest Burmese bandit can never understand it. In Rangoon, the heat of noon is just what the natives shun. They put their scotch or rye down and lie down. In a jungle town where the sun beats down to the range of man and beast, the English garb of the English man only gets a bit more creased. In Bengal, to move at all is seldom ever done. But mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun. Mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun. The smallest Malay rabbit deplores a stupid habit. In Hong Kong, they strike a gong and fire up a Hyundai gun. To
for every man, each inmate who's in late. In a mangrove swamp where the pythons romp, there's bees from 12 till 2. Even caribous lie around and snooze, for there's nothing else to do. In Bangkok, at 12 o'clock, they foam at the mouth and run. But mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun.
How's it coming, Molly? Started to fade yet?
No, it hasn't. That spot is getting bigger and blacker by the minute.
Well, don't give up, Molly. Keep scrubbing away and it'll come out all right. Say, I see here by the paper that the Cubs opened in
Cincinnati. Put that paper down and get to work, McGee. Heavenly days, you got us into this milk and salt mess, and you'll help get us out.
Okay, okay.
I've scrubbed that ink spot till I'm worn out. Between that and the smell of all this milk and salt...
You mean confidentially, the ink stays? Don't you get it, Molly?
Ain't funny, McGee.
I thought that was pretty apt.
No, it was. It's pretty apt to get you down here on your knees with another scrub brush.
Okay.
Walk over here and take a look at this goo.
Okay. Am I wrong, or is the color all coming out of the rug?
No. For once, you're not wrong, dearie. Mm-hmm. We've absolutely ruined a lovely oriental carpet that set us back $27.95.
Come in.
Ah, good day, Mrs. McGee. Hello, Fibber. Well, what's this? Spill some salt?
Yes, Mr. Gildersleeve, and some milk.
I got a gob of ink on the carpet, Gildersleeve, and we're trying to take it out by the salt and milk method.
Oh, it won't work.
What?
What you mean it won't work, Gildersleeve?
I tried it myself, McGee. It's no good. The best thing for ink stains on the carpet is root beer.
Root beer? I never heard of that. What do? Just pour it on?
Oh, no, no. You go out in the backyard and drink it. That takes your mind off the stain, and you come back in, throw a small rug over it, and forget it.
You're a big help, Throckmorton. Here we are in a jam, and you bust in here with a...
Well, I didn't spill your darned old ink.
Well, who said you did spill it?
Anne, if you weren't so ham-handed, you wouldn't always be in a mess like this.
Oh.
You're too primitive to be trusted with pen and ink anyway. Oh. What you need is a chisel and a slab of rock.
Oh, is that so? One more crack like that, Gildersleeve, and I'll box your ears. If I can find a big enough box.
Now, look here, McGee. None of your impudence, or my right hand will play my left hand a game of ping-pong with your skull.
Oh, yeah? And you can use your beard for a net.
I haven't got a beard.
Well, you will have by the time you're old enough to tackle me. Yeah. Oh, you can't intimidate me, Gildersleeve.
Listen, that's intimidate, dearie.
It is?
Yeah.
Certainly it is, stupid. Intimidate, from the Latin timido. Timido, timidas, timida.
Smart, Alec.
Timidamus, timidatus, timidam. Well, that's not too bad to remember from my college days, is it, McGee?
Oh, yeah. Your knowledge may be from college, but your Latin's from Manhattan.
Is that so? Why, you little
brain... Now, hold it. Wait a minute. This is all beside the point.
Well...
Look, Mr. Gildersleeve, in your opinion, should we go on with this milk and salt treatment for that ink stain?
No.
Why not?
Well, why should you? The carpet's ruined now. Look at it. Wouldn't dry out for several months anyway. What do you want in your living room, a swamp?
Well, I think he's right, McGee. We might as well throw the carpet away.
Sure.
Well, okay. Can't say we didn't try. Grab a hold of the far end there, Gildersleeve. Old pal.
Yeah.
We'll roll it up.
Well, how about all these milk bottles and all this salt and stuff?
Roll them up inside the rug. I'll open the window and you can throw the whole mess out. Go ahead, boys.
You ready?
Contact.
Okay, go to sleep. Over this way.
Here we go. I got it, McGee.
Raise it up a little, McGee. That's it. Now heave it out. Well, thank you, Mr. Gildersleeve. And thank you, McGee, for ruining me carpet with your fine ideas. Look at that bare floor. Look at it.
I am. boy, have we been dumb. Why didn't I think of it before?
Well, what's so funny?
Won't that floor look beautiful with Johnson's wax on it?
Heavenly days after 5 years. Well, folks, we want to thank you, our cast, and the makers of Johnson's Wax for these pleasant 5 years.
We especially want to thank a fellow that you don't hear much about, and that's our writer, Don Quinn, who's been with us for 10 years.
That's right.
This has been a great day, and I'm sorry I had to spoil the day by spilling that ink.
Oh, that's all right, dearie. If I hadn't worked so hard trying to scrub it off, the excitement of the anniversary would have got me anyway.
Yeah, me too. I'm wore to a frazzle. I'd go right up to bed if I had any brains at all.
But as it is, let's go to a movie.
Huh? Oh, good night.
Good night, all.
This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat, inviting you all to join us again next Tuesday night. Good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
That's Fibber McGee and Molly with their five-year anniversary show. See how that worked out?
See?
And this is our one-year anniversary show. Fibber McGee and Molly, April 16th, 1940. Fibber spills ink on the rug, sponsored by Johnson's Wax. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Hour two of the WGN Radio Theater. This is our one-year anniversary, I'm pretty sure. I looked at the calendar, I counted backwards.
No, I called you and said, this is our one-year anniversary. That's how
exactly
it goes.
That's exactly what happened.
He's like, is it really?
Man, it's cold under this bus.
Yeah, I bet.
12:08 on a Monday morning. This is a happy Monday, Lisa.
Happy Monday, Carl.
My co-host. And then there's Mike Estella over here, our executive producer. And Mike hasn't said one word tonight, have you?
Or I've maybe said one word.
Okay. Yes. So you're here. Glad to see you there, buddy. And then Dan Long, the best in the business, our producer in the booth. Hey, Dan, what's going on, buddy?
Oh, nothing. Just working.
All right.
We're keeping you busy back there.
And we have suspense all queued up, ready to go here in a few minutes.
It is ready to go. So, just say the word.
All righty. So we've been doing something fun the last few weeks. We've been taking a certain personality from the golden age of radio and film, and we've been spotlighting that person tonight. And all the way to 2 o'clock in the morning here, we are spotlighting Jim and Marion Jordan, real-life married couple. They played Fibber McGee and Molly on radio for many, many years. You'll hear them starring in Suspense in this hour, and then they appear as their characters, Fibber McGee and Molly, as guests on The Great Gildersleeve. That's in our third hour of the WGN Radio Theater, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This famous singer-songwriter stars in the upcoming comedy Barbershop, The Next Cut, focusing on the gang coming together to save their shop and their neighborhood.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. You'll win a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's Pizza if you get this right. So here's a hint. You'll hear her now in a TV clip as a judge on American Idol.
I am obsessed with you. Listen, thank you, because I was beginning to feel like I was in the Twilight Zone.
All right, I know Lisa says that to me all the time. I was feeling working with you is like being in the Twilight Zone.
Yes.
So call us 312-981-7200. Identify that singer-songwriter judge, and we'll find our winner after this break.
This is the WGN Radio Theater's one-year anniversary show. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip again.
I am obsessed with you. Listen, thank you, because I was beginning to feel like I was in the Twilight Zone.
Let's talk to Bonnie from Roselle. Hey, Bonnie.
Hello.
Hi.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you, thank you. Can you recognize that voice for us?
I do, Nicki Minaj.
It is Nicki Minaj. Did you used to watch her when she was on American Idol?
Yes.
Yeah, me too. Bonnie, you are a winner. You have won a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. You can check out their menu at loumalnati's.com or visit one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations.
Thank you so much.
And thank you so much as well.
Thanks, Bonnie. All right, before we tune into suspense, I want to remind our listeners that we have a Facebook page. This is a great way for you to contact us. Let us know what you want to hear. We play our listeners' favorites, and we also have a text line now, they tell me, right? More technology. How do they expect me to remember all this stuff?
That's why you have Mike and you have me and you have Dan. You've got a team of experts working with you.
You can text us any kind of a comment or question or suggestion. And that text line number is 312-981-7200. That's the same number to call in to win prizes, too. 312-981-7200. It has a dual function there. We can get a call from you or a text. Wow.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Suspense is on the agenda here. But, Mike, tell everyone how they can reach us on Facebook.
If you just hop onto Facebook, look up WGM Radio Theater, like us, check out the page. A lot of pictures of all of these actors who are performing in all of these radio dramas.
It's fun to see them. There's three pictures of Jim and Mary and Jordan up, I'm pretty sure, right?
Well, two of them are up right now.
Okay, so
but
we're going to do
as soon as the Great Gildersleeve.
And I tried to pick pictures that were kind of different eras of them. There's a real early one, and then there's one around the time that they did this suspense program in 1949, and then one about the time they would have been on Fibber McGee and Molly as guests on Gildersleeve from 1943. So check that out at Facebook. We also have a website for this show. It's WGNRadio.com, right? WGNRadioTheater.com, right? Okay, Lisa's nodding, which means I guess that's what it is.
It's all good.
Although WGNRadio.com, you can check out the video.
Oh, that's
you
right.
You can check out our podcasts
camera.
As well.
Yeah.
Anytime.
All right. Yep. Nice. Okay, ready for suspense?
Let's do it.
All right. One of the best radio mystery series of all time was Suspense. It came to radio in 1942, lasted all the way to 1962, and it is considered to be one of the best, if not the best, mystery series. Had wonderful actors, wonderful writers, terrific production values, and it also made a transition to television in 1949, but I think the radio show was better than the television. I've watched a lot of the TV shows. The radio show was great. Jim and Marion Jordan, who played Fibber McGee and Molly, were asked to star in this episode called Backseat Driver. In my opinion, it's one of the best episodes from the series. It's a terrific, terrific episode. I think you will like this. Let's go back to February 3rd, 1949, part one of Backseat Driver on Suspense.
And now, Autolite and its 60,000 dealers and service stations present
Suspense. Tonight, Autolite brings you Fibber McGee and Molly in Backseat Driver, a suspense play produced and directed by Anton M. Leder. And now, Autolite presents Fibber McGee and Molly in a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
It can't happen to you. You read about stuff like that in the papers. Girls murdered and mutilated. Drunks left dying in the gutter for the handful of change they had in their pockets. Lonesome old men tortured because some hoodlum gets the idea they're misers with a pot of gold hidden under the floorboards of the shack. Sure, you know it's real, but it can't happen to you. Oh, you get your fair share of trouble. I've been a professional man here in Los Angeles for 30 years. I've met up with bums and grifters and petty sharpers. They're around in any business. But the viciousness, the real deep-down dirt, that's for somebody else. You do your work and go home to your family. And for a real bang-up evening to break the monotony, you take your wife out to a movie. That's what I did that Saturday night. We'd driven all the way in from the San Fernando Valley to Beverly Hills for a picture Ellie especially wanted to see.
Wasn't that a good movie, Joe?
Uh-huh.
Just the kind I like. Songs and dancing and girls in pretty clothes. I get so tired of cops and robbers.
What's wrong with cops and robbers?
Oh, you know what I mean. Murder movies. Honestly, all the policemen stupid and all the crooks sneering out of the corners of their mouths.
Yeah, the stuff those Hollywood boys dream up. You'd think the streets were knee-deep in blood and you couldn't hear yourself think for machine guns.
Yeah.
Well, here we are, honey.
You get in first.
Okay. All right, Ellie?
Well, now, just a second. All right, Joe. Don't forget the gas.
I got plenty to take us out to the valley. I'll fill up at Bill's.
Dee-da-da. Dee. You remember how that song goes, Joe?
What song?
In the picture. You know, Two on the Moon. The one the boy sang to the girl.
Oh, that one. Let's see. Ah, heck, I don't know.
Oh, well. We'll be hearing it again on the radio.
How about turning it on?
The radio?
Yeah.
Sure.
Set her around 1100. We ought to get some news in a few minutes. I'd like to hear whether they caught that fellow.
That awful mass murderer?
Uh-huh. They spotted him in L.A. this afternoon. He got away.
I know. You told us at supper. It makes you shiver.
Don't worry. He won't get away with it. We left the lights of Beverly Hills behind and turned into Coldwater Canyon. It's as quick a way as any to get us across the Hollywood Hills to the valley. It's dark in the canyon, quiet, with mighty little traffic at night. I cut my lights up full and we swept up the side of the ridge. News program came on, but I didn't pay much attention. I was talking about brush fires. They'd already put out one near my place, though they were still patrolling it. We were over the ridge and sliding down to the valley before the program got to the part I wanted to hear.
There it is.
Pick it up higher, Ellie.
And now the latest news on the New Hampshire murderer. 2 weeks ago, Lewis Matrick wiped out an entire family in Greenlee, New Hampshire. Today, he was spotted 3,000 miles from the scene of his crime. At 5:30 this afternoon, a patrolman saw and definitely identified Matrick in downtown Los Angeles.
He is here.
However, by darting through heavy traffic at the risk of his life, the killer was again able to make his escape. According to neighbors of the slaughtered family, Matrick first appeared in Greenlee about a year ago. From fingerprints in the Noland home, Lewis Matrick has been identified as Lloyd Matthews, ex-convict. He is wanted for questioning in the robbery and murder of a New York storekeeper a year ago.
Oh, my.
A crime that netted the killer less than $20.
Can you imagine?
Matrick, or Matthews, is 32 years old, height 5 feet 9 inches, weight 155 pounds. He has blue eyes, light brown hair, nose slanted to the left. When seen this afternoon, he was wearing a blue suit and a gray pork pie hat. He...
Awful. Awful.
Not pretty, no.
And he's somewhere around L.A. this minute. Joe?
Hmm?
You think it's right us leaving Annie and Bud all alone while
we... Now, Ellen. Annie's grown up, and Bud's a smart youngster, if I do say so myself. You can't wrap kids in cotton wool.
I know. Oh, I'm silly, I guess. Neighbors close all around. All they'd have to do is yell. But what would make a young man do a dreadful thing like that?
Could be a lot of things. Maybe he's got a screw loose. Maybe he went nuts over a girl. Maybe he gets a kick out of killing like
some... You know all the answers, don't you?
Joe!
What the... Keep going. Go on, keep going. I got a gun here and I'll use it. Tell him you.
Ellie?
Against the back of my neck. I can feel it. Cold.
Well, are you gonna move?
Okay. Okay, brother. Okay. You're the boss.
You said it. I'm boss, and remember it. Otherwise, I'll blow a hole through your wife's head. I've had experience in these things.
For Suspense, Autolite is bringing you Fibber McGee and Molly in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
I drove that car like we were skirting the rim of the Grand Canyon with nothing between us on the bottom but a mile of country air. This was it, the thing that happens to other people, the ones that end up on slabs in the morgue, but not to me. Not to Ellie. First car we'd seen since we left traffic swooped down behind us. It passed, but not before the headlights caught our passenger clean in my rearview mirror. He was hunched forward, sitting on the edge of the back seat so he could keep the gun rammed into the nap of Ellie's neck. He had light brown hair, pale eyes, and a nose that slanted. His mouth twitched, jittery. As the car went by, his eyes caught mine in the mirror and flickered.
Keep your eyes on the road.
Sure, sure. Lose your hat?
Bright boy. Like I said, you know all the answers. No, I didn't lose it. I stuffed it down a drain.
Still wearing the blue suit, though.
I figure it'll change pretty quick now. Think yours will fit me?
You can have the suit and the car.
Ellen,
just
let it... Ellen.
Joe, it's Matrick.
The missus is bright, too.
He crawled in here while we were in the movie. Joe, you should have had the car door fixed. You know better.
Honey, I meant to. I was going to tend to that tomorrow.
Shut up! Let's see if you can both be bright enough to keep your trap shut. Turn left on Ventura. Take the slow lane. And don't try playing no tricks. I've been in this burg before.
Okay by me.
That's real bite of you. Straight out to open country, Mac. Then I'll take the missus up on that offer of the suit and car.
What happens to us?
Why, you just walk home. What else? Play it safe and you ain't got a thing to worry about.
That was a laugh, that was. Nothing to worry about. That'd kill you. Once we got out into open country, we'd have a chance of walking away from the car. All a murderer can hope for is time. He doesn't leave witnesses around to get the law on his tail 1 second sooner than necessary. All I could do was stall and pray and make what feeble gestures I could at Lady Luck. The thing that came into my mind was so risky it brought my hair up on end. But there was a chance, provided that trigger finger didn't start jerking. In the bright lights of the boulevard, I didn't think he'd notice. But a traffic officer would. I turned into Ventura and took the far lane, obedient as a whipped pup. Must have made 2 or 3 miles before I heard what I was hoping for.
What's that?
Huh? Oh, the siren? Why, an ambulance, I guess. We hear a lot of
that. That ain't no ambulance. It's a motorcycle cop.
Joe, it's young Mike Kennedy. He patrols this stretch.
What are you up to? What are you trying to pull?
Nothing. The kid's a friend of
mine. Think you can get me easier? Well, I warned you. I ain't going alone. You asked
for
it.
Listen, will you? The kid lives near us, practically grew up under our feet. All he wants is to pass the time of day or maybe send a message to our Annie.
Yeah?
Yeah. You start popping now and we'll all be dead. Keep your shirt on and I'll get rid of him.
Okay. But it better be good.
I pulled to the curb and Mike came up alongside. He sat balancing the bike between his knees and the grin on his face was a mile wide. It had worked. At least we were still alive and Mike wasn't 2 feet away. But where did we go from here? I had to think, but my brain was wet wool. My tongue stuck to the roof of my mouth.
Well, what do you know, if it isn't Uncle Joe?
Something funny, kid?
After all the times you've read us the riot act about observing the letter of the law. Oh, brother, wait till I tell Annie.
Mike Kennedy, what's the matter with you? I didn't notice anything wrong.
Hi, Aunt Ellie. Nothing much the matter. Just Uncle Joe here proceeding sedately out the boulevard with his headlights up full.
Headlights? By golly, that's right. I must have forgotten it, didn't I?
You oughtn't to forget those things, Joe. Someday a big bad cop might come along and haul you off to the state. Hey, is that Annie back there?
No, it isn't.
It's our new neighbor, Mike, Mr. Anderson.
Oh, that right? Glad to meet you, sir.
Hello?
I didn't know there were any vacancies out our way.
Well, there weren't until recently. Mr. Anderson has taken over the Charles place.
The Charles place? Are you kidding?
Nope. Looks like things got too much for old man Charles at last. He's clearing out for good.
Kind of sudden, wasn't it?
I guess so.
Well, that's too bad. For old man Charles, I mean. Mighty nice for Mr. Anderson, though. Good places are hard to find these days. All right, Uncle Joe. I'll let you off this time. Give my love to Annie.
Mike!
Watch it!
Yes, sir?
Nothing. Just come see us soon, boy. Always glad to have you.
Thanks. I'll be around my next night off. I got a date with Annie. So long.
terrific episode of Suspense. We're tuning it in. Jim and Marion Jordan, starring in Backseat Driver from February 3rd, 1949. We'll get back to that in just a few minutes. Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Carl Amari. My co-host, sitting right next to me, my second banana.
Next to you, but not right next to you. We're not touching or anything.
You're my, is that what you are, my second banana?
You can call me whatever you want.
How about my sidekick?
Whatever you say.
My co-host.
See how easygoing I am? Whatever you say, Carl.
Wow. Right? I appreciate that, Lisa.
Yeah, good disposition.
You have some pretty deep dimples. You know that? Is that because
you
smile?
You just mentioned that recently.
She smiles a lot. She's always smiling, and maybe that's why they're getting deeper and
honestly,
deeper.
Honestly, dimples are genetic. I think I got them from my dad.
Right. Oh, he has a...
He's got the
same ones. We were talking about Mr. Matanky earlier today, weren't we?
Yeah, we did.
He just bought a new car. We won't... bought a new car.
He did just bought
Is
a new car.
Is he excited?
He hasn't gotten it yet. He's still in Florida. When he comes home, he'll get it.
Yeah, Mr. Matanky. When I grow up, I want to be just like him.
Me too. I think I am.
Does he want to adopt anybody? Because that would be kind of cool. Then we could be brother and sister.
I think I'm a handful as it
and
is.
And co-host and co-host.
Yeah, that would be great,
Yeah,
Carl.
Let your dad and mom know that I am available for adoption.
Oh.
That would be nice.
Maybe you should let him know
yourself.
I could
drive his hand-me-down cars.
Yeah, I'm going to do that.
He's got some nice cars at Mr.
I get the hand-me-downs.
Mr. and Mrs. Matanky. So, you know what? I am telling you, I'm so psyched about what I ordered this week from Mies Meals.
So tell me what you picked.
This week I ordered a chimichurri steak, which is going to be great. And then my son is a big salmon guy. He loves salmon. So I ordered the Mediterranean lemon chai salmon.
Nice.
So let me see. So that's next week's, or I placed
You'll
that order.
You'll order that now, right.
I placed the order, yeah. And so then we get that next week. And this week, I'm making a rotini Modena chicken and spinach. So I'm going to be whipping it up in the kitchen because it all comes all ready to go. You just put it together. It has like little cue cards in there for me. And Mies Meals, folks, if you don't know about them, they're one of our sponsors. And Lisa and I and Mike, all our members, or we get the best food sent right to our home.
It's very fresh. It's always creative, and it's healthy. And it really cuts down a lot of the prep time. There's no shopping. There's no chopping. There's no measuring. There's no thinking, what are we going to have for dinner tonight? It all comes fresh and ready to go into the oven at my door every Monday morning.
Yeah, it's terrific.
I pick the ingredients that the items that I like, and I even leave out certain ingredients that I don't care for. I mean, I can say no peanuts. I can say no gluten. Whatever it is, any kind of special dietary requests, I can. Mies Meals does accommodate that.
Right,
so.
And it's not a subscription service. Not you don't have to order every week. You order when you want to. Don't order when you don't want to. And as Lisa says, you can customize your order. But here's the great thing. Anyone listening, any of our listeners, we have a special offer. It's a limited time. You can order a free dinner for two, and it's delivered to your home. And there's no charge at all. There's no obligation. There's no strings attached. Mies Meals wants you to try them because they're so certain you'll love them that you'll want to become a customer of Mies. So they want you to try it absolutely free. A dinner for two and delivered to your home. All you got to do is mention radio.
Right. So it's so simple. You go to the website, miesmeals.com, M-E-E-Z-Meals.com. Choose whatever dinner you like. You can pick ones that Carl likes or something else. There's about 10
salmon
or 12 options.
Or the steak.
You give them your information. And on Monday morning, a messenger literally delivers it to your front door.
Right.
Period. That's it. No money transaction involved whatsoever.
No.
So it's a really great deal, and it's a really great company to work with. So I hope that you
they
will take
really
advantage
great.
Of this and try it out. And we've gotten a lot of texts just tonight letting us know how happy people have been with their Mies Meals orders.
Yeah, we'll post some of those. Yeah, people have been really, really nice. They've tried out the special offer where they get dinner for two absolutely free, delivered to their home, and they love it so much. They've been very kind in posting about how much they love the food.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So try that out. Go to Mies Meals. That's MEEZ Meals.com. All right. We're in the midst of tuning into Backseat Driver starring Jim and Marion Jordan. Here's the conclusion to Suspense.
That was that. Mike turned his bike and headed back down the boulevard. The chance had come and gone. But it felt to me like half my mind went off with the boy yelling at him. Must have been half a minute before I could pull myself together and ease back into traffic. Nobody said anything. I didn't dare to, and neither did Ellie. I couldn't see her, but I could feel her holding herself stiff as a ramrod, scared even to turn her head. When two people have lived together as long as we have, each one knows what the other one is thinking. I went back to driving and praying. That and cutting my eyes up to the mirror, just in case there might be a white motorcycle eye following us. There wasn't, of course. Back in the back, I knew he was watching, too. Those flickering eyes darting like lightning between us and the rear window. He was too busy checking to talk. Not that that helped much. Rage and fear were pouring out of him so thick you could have grabbed a hunk of the atmosphere in your hand. It was queer to drive along like that on the crowded highway. Traffic streaming both ways. Lights from drugstores and cocktail joints and eating houses blazing to the sky. And to know if I lifted a finger for help, I'd sign our death warrants. It had to be luck, all luck. There was still a chance I'd get it. The way I figured it, we'd started out with just about enough gas to get us back to Bill's station. When we hit that, the meter ought to show empty. Gas gauge was hidden from me by the rim of the steering wheel, but I was pretty sure I was right. I waited until I saw the red and green lights above Bill's pumps a block and a half away. And very slow and easy, I slumped over for a peek at the gauge. I leaned just too far.
Shut up!
Sure.
What now? What were you looking at?
I was just easing the crick out of my neck.
Yes, you was. You was looking at the dash. You...
Oh, so that's it. Fresh out of gas.
Look, I just remembered... Don't give me that. You knew it all along. From now on, you keep your hands on the wheel, Mac, but leave me to the driving. Turn into that filling station. Get high test gas and fill her up.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Bill.
Evening,
hello,
Ellie.
Bill.
Oh, evening, sir. Up at the top?
Yeah, Ethel.
Ethel it is. Here you've been to the pictures, eh?
Uh-huh.
You people know everybody in the whole valley.
We've lived here 30 years, from back when this was just farmland. Of course, we know lots of people.
I don't like it. Get the gas and get out.
Say, I was up to Mirandy's for supper.
That right?
Oh, boy, her chili gets better every time. Don't see how it can, but it does. She's saving some for you. Said you'd be around after the show.
Oh, my. I saw Miranda this afternoon and told her we'd be by for sure, Joe.
That'll be $3.50 on the nose.
$3.50.
Mm.
Thanks, Bill.
Yeah, same to you.
What's all that about?
Nothing much.
Come on. I got to ask you everything twice.
Miranda runs a drive-in up the road a ways. On show nights, we usually drop in for a carton of chili to take home.
I just hope she won't call home when we don't show up and get Annie all worried.
Wait a minute. Drive-in, you said?
Yeah.
And Miss Miranda could start checking on you?
I didn't mean it like that. It's
she
just...
She could call your Annie, and between the two of them, they'd have the cops on the lookout for you before midnight.
You're crazy.
Like a fox. I ain't kept ahead of the buttons all this time by taking chances.
We'll just pick up that chili, Mac. You want to go to Miranda's?
Why not? Leave Annie get a beauty sleep. I can cover a lot of ground before tomorrow morning. I ain't eaten so good lately, I could use the food, too. And with you and the missus to front for me? What's to worry about?
He was right about that. I went back to driving and praying. Miranda's place is one of those goldfish bowls, mostly glass with light pouring out across the space marked for outside service. She saw us pulling up, grabbed a quart carton off the back shelf, and hustled to the door.
Here you are, Ellie. I was just saying to Betsy, I better fix up that chili, Betsy. It's about time Ellie and Joe was showing up, figuring the distance from Beverly Hills.
Thank you, Miranda.
Who's that in the back seat? I don't seem to recollect your face, young man. Though anybody will tell you, I never forget a face.
Well, this is Mr. Anderson, Miranda. He just came out here from the east.
Ooh, is that a fact? Say, Joe, you planning to go straight up Ventura home?
Sure, why?
Oh, don't you do it. Go the back way, even if it does take longer. Mm-hmm. Of course, the brush fire between here and your place is out. but there are still 50, 60 men patrolling it.
What's that?
Oh, but that ain't nothing to what's going on further out the valley. That new fire's clean out of control, licking up hundreds of acres. Well, they've been sending truckloads of firefighters past here all evening, and the road's blocked for miles, For miles, they tell me. And all them poor ranchers losing their homes. Being from the east, you wouldn't understand. But brush fires is awful things once they get out.
Thanks. Start moving. We take the back way to your house.
To our house?
What say? Oh, you staying with Ellie and Joe?
Until I can get into my own place. What are we waiting for?
Night, Miranda.
Well, goodbye. Be sure you come see me, Mr. Anderson. I'll be looking for you.
So there it was. We weren't going to the country. We weren't going to be left to rot at the foot of a cliff or buried deep in brush. No, we were going home. Home to the kids. Taking a murderer with us. I still couldn't see Ellie, but I could feel her tensing up, tight as a pulled drawstring.
Mr. Matrick, you didn't mean what you said, did you, about coming home with us?
You know a better place I can hide out till the road's open?
But it wouldn't be safe. We've got neighbors close all around. If somebody sees you...
Nobody will see me. Nobody better.
Joe, couldn't we get around the fire?
Yeah, that'd be better. We could try. There are other roads through the valley. Listen, Matrick, we'll nose around and find a way through somehow.
Cut it out. You heard the old biddy. Hundreds of acres burning, firefighters, cops. Get off the highway. We're going home.
No, I won't have it. Joe, you stop the car right here.
Shut up.
You heard me, Joe. I won't have him in my house, not with Annie and Bud.
I said shut up.
For heart's sake, Ellie.
It doesn't matter about us, but the kids, I won't let him...
One word out of you!
Joe, stop!
Ellen, hush.
Oh, Joe.
Don't say another thing. I'm sorry, honey. Matrick's the boss. You gotta do like he says.
That's telling her. Sure, do like I say and everything will be rosy. You got no call to worry about the kids. I like kids. As long as nobody gives me the brush off. We'll wake them up soon as we get home. And you and Miss Annie can fix up a chilly supper for us. We'll have us a picnic. And then, as soon as the fire's out, we'll all take a trip to the country. Another picnic, huh?
You keep going. As long as you're breathing, you keep going. Even when it looks like there's no way out, you hang on by your toenails. We poked up and down those black valley streets that twist and turn and sometimes wind up in dead ends. Ellie stopped crying after a while. She slumped down with her head rolling on the seat back, limp as a rag doll with the stuffing leaked out. It took a long time, but it had to come to an end. I saw the bulk of the house looming up. There was light sneaking around the edges of the blinds up in Annie's room. She wasn't asleep after all. She'd be sitting up in bed, maybe plastering red stuff on her fingers and dreaming about the date with Mike. Bud's room was dark. He'd be wrapped in covers like in a cocoon and dreaming. Whatever boys dream, I couldn't remember. I pulled up to the concrete walk I'd poured with my own hands before there was any Annie or Bud. I cut the lights. In a second or two, my eyes got used to the dark. I could make out the high hedge Ellie planted around the place and the roof rising up beyond it.
Out, missus. Face the house. Now you, Mac. Slide out the same side. Stand beside her. Funny business. I'm right behind you.
Look out, Joe!
Oh, no, no!
I'm Okay, Mike. Got him.
You all right, Uncle Joe? Aunt Ellie?
Ellie. Mm-hmm. Ellie, honey. You all right?
All right, indeed. Smack flat on my face on a concrete walk and you falling on me.
Nothing wrong with her.
That's my girl.
Oh, well, don't just stand there. Help me up.
Here you are.
Oh, I've got to get in the house before the kids come busting out here. I won't have them mixed up in this.
Well, how's he doing, boys?
Got him through the gun hand and the right shoulder. See?
A lucky shot, copper. If you weren't lucky, you'd all be cold meat now.
Maybe. Matrick, isn't it, Uncle Joe?
That's him. Miranda scribed him to you, eh?
The old girl didn't miss a trick. She even knew you were taking the back way home. You left a clear trail, Uncle Joe. Slick work.
I had to get him out of the car before the fireworks started. Ellie didn't stand a chance. She helped, though. Ellie catches on quick.
I'll bet.
A mean guy like Matrick. Make him think you don't want to do something, and he'll break his neck doing it. I let on I was trying to run out of gas. That got us to Bill's. Then we both made out there was no sense going to Miranda's, so we got bullied into going to Miranda's. It was 1,000 to 1 she'd run off at the mouth about the brush fires and scare him into hiding out. After that, all Ellie had to do was turn on the hysterics. He was dead set on coming here.
Bright boy, like I said.
Bright enough. You did all right, too, Mike. I was watching the rearview mirror all the time you were tailing us. But you never showed.
You knew I was there, though. When one officer starts double-talking another officer, he wants to know why.
Officer, double-talk. You never said a thing to him except that I'd bought some place out here.
Yeah, the Charles place.
Poor old man Charles. In a tough spot and moving out for good.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Matrick, didn't anybody ever tell you it wasn't smart to take up with strangers? Maybe I'd better introduce myself. The name's Charles. Joe Charles, detective, homicide. Tonight I was off duty and was just taking my wife to a movie.
Thank you, Fibber McGee and Molly, for a splendid performance.
Why, thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much, Bud. We're not used to doing a show with a gun stuck in our backs.
No.
We're used to doing them with Jack Benny breathing down our necks. And vice versa. But that guy over there, he looks familiar.
Why, dearie, that's Mr. Wilcox.
Old Waxy himself, the guy that sells Johnson's Wax on our Tuesday show?
Not Waxy on Thursdays, dearie. Sparky.
Sparky, eh? Well, what do you know? Hey, Junior.
Hello, Fibber. Hello, Molly.
Hello, Mr. Wilcox.
Say, you two were terrific tonight.
Just a minute, Fibber and Molly. Don't go away.
Oh, that's right. You want us to say that word.
If you please.
Oh, yes. Well, go ahead, McGee.
No, you say it, Molly.
Well, why don't we both say it then?
Okay. Well, I know you're going to want to hear Radio's Outstanding Theater of Thrills next week because Charles Lawton is going to be on the program.
Yes. And in a famous story by John Collier called Demortius. And it's another gripping study in...
Suspense. Tonight's suspense play was by Sally Thorson, with music composed by Lucian Morawek and conducted by Lud Bluskin. The entire production was under the direction of Anton M. Leader. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
I love the theme music on Suspense, you know? It kind of dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. It's very cool.
I thought you were going to hum it for me. I was waiting.
Nah.
Nah. Well, a little bit of humming.
Well, luckily for you, there's no words. I can't sing it.
Right.
That's Suspense. My favorite mystery show of all time, Suspense. Going back to February 3rd, 1949, Backseat Driver, a terrific episode from the series, Jim and Marion Jordan. And that was heard on CBS. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a break. Then it's much more coming your way here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right. You grill much, Lisa? You grill out on the grill? You like to grill?
What are you talking about?
Summer's around the corner here. You like to grill?
Well, when summer comes, ask me again, would you?
If you're going to grill, I'd like to come over and have some food.
What do you think I'm going to grill?
I don't know. I like steak. I like chicken.
Okay.
Whatever you want to grill me. I like it.
I'll grill you.
Hey, free food, I'm there. Right, Dan? How about you? Free food. You're there?
Yep, I'm
well,
there.
Well, no, yeah. I don't know. Last time you invited Dan for free food.
Yeah, I did invite Dan. I invited Dan to the Casa Amari party.
That's true. I did miss the ping pong.
Yeah.
And free food and drinks.
Speaking of ping pong.
I broke my own cardinal rule.
You know what, Dan? Am I glad that you just mentioned that? I want to talk about something ping pong wise. I challenged Bill Leff. I challenged him, and he accepted my challenge. I hear he's a great ping pong player. So I thought I would, like in the tradition of the Old West, when you would have like a gunfight at OK Corral, right? So I challenged him via text, and he accepted the challenge.
Good. Well, you'll have to
film
it.
I'm a little nervous now because he accepted it pretty readily, you know?
Where are you going to play?
We're going to play somewhere. We're going to have a game. We're going to have
right.
a match.
Right.
I'm a serious ping pong player, Lisa Wolf.
I know. I
don't
mess
around.
I've seen you at work.
Ping pong is my game, you know? Everybody's got to be good at something. That's about it for me.
Yeah, I'm
ping
still
pong,
looking.
Well, you're good at cooking me's meals now.
Yes, I am. I'm still looking for other things, though, in addition.
Yeah, well, ping pong, I'm hearing through the grapevine, Stephanie Menendez says, and Todd Manley, they say that Bill is an unbelievable ping pong player. He has his own paddle and everything. It's like have gun, will travel, have paddle, will travel with Bill Leff.
Now, so, did you challenge him, as I suggested, in the form of like a Rowdy Roddy Piper wrestling promo?
No, I didn't have I just felt like the urge. I heard him talking on the radio about his ping pong prowess, and I thought, okay, you know what? I'm going to text him right now. I texted him, and he accepted it. I said, me and you were on, and so we're going to play somewhere
soon. Big Bad Carl's on it.
We're play somewhere soon, me and
All right.
Bill. Okay. I'm looking forward to it. I would love to have a challenge, Lisa and I played the other day. Not much of a challenge.
What?
Lisa. You and I.
What are you talking about?
I was playing you lefty, too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Wait till I...
Big
right.
shot over here.
This'll be good. Okay. So in this hour of the WGN Radio Theater, we're going to tune into The Great Gildersleeve. We're spotlighting Jim and Marianne Jordan. And we're here till 2 o'clock in the morning. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming romance thriller Colonia and searches for her abducted boyfriend, which draws her into a notorious cult.
All right, what do they win?
They will win a pair of tickets to Thornton Wilder's play Our Town, which is at the Leela Arts Center.
All right, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. You'll hear her now. Okay, say
you'll
that again.
You'll hear her now.
You will hear her now in a scene from Harry Potter.
You foul, loathsome, evil little cockroach!
A mining, no!
All right, there you go. If you know who that is, call us, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
We are back with Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
You foul, loathsome, evil little cockroach!
A mining, no!
Oh, my goodness. Phil from Oak Park, how are you?
Hi, how you doing?
Great. Can you recognize that celebrity?
Yes, Emma Watson.
You are right, Phil. You are a winner, and you have won a pair of tickets to Thornton Wilder's Pulitzer Prize-winning play, Our Town. It's playing now through May 1st at the Leela Art Center in downtown Des Plaines. That's L-E-E-L-A artcenter.com. Thanks so much, Phil. I hope you love the show. Great.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Take care.
All right, Lisa, it's time for our final classic radio show of this edition, which is edition 68, our 1-year anniversary here on WGN Radio, and it's been a pleasure. And we're here every Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. playing your favorite classic radio shows. You can always search us on Facebook and let us know what you want to hear, right?
Yep.
Lisa always says, hey, this person wants to hear Jack Benny or Boston Blackie or whatever. And
we have a lot of comments and suggestions and a lot of praise and a lot of, everything coming through Facebook. We really do love to hear from you. So thank you so much for your support and for letting us know what you like, because you guys are, the one that makes us, the reason we're here for a year. So we're feeling really appreciative.
And Lisa gets to exercise her thumbs. She has the fastest thumbs in the West, North, East, and South.
Well, somebody's got to do a little work around here.
She replies to everybody. She's just flying. Like $6 million woman.
Yes, the bionic
thumbs,
woman.
The bionic woman, mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, it's time now for The Great Gildersleeve. Now, this is kind of cool. Fibber McGee and Molly was on the air for many, many years, and we talked about this earlier. The Great Gildersleeve, Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve, was a character that would sort of was a neighbor to Fibber McGee, and he would stop by, and Fibber and him would always have like some blustery conversation. And then Gildersleeve spun off for his own series, well, in 1941. So a couple of years later, in 1943, Fibber McGee and Molly came onto his show, right? Just for a visit. And we have that episode for you now. So Jim and Marion Jordan, who were spotlighting on this edition of the WGN Radio Theater, are heard as guests on Gildersleeve. This is from January 10th, 1943. Here's part one now of The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
Kraft Cheese Company will also bring you Bing Crosby every Thursday night. Present each week at this time, Harold Perry as The Great Gildersleeve, written by John Wheaton. Now on to Summerfield and The Great Gildersleeve. Saturday afternoon finds him in a flurry of preparation for the expected visit of his old friends, Fibber McGee and Molly. For hours, he's been running up and down stairs, issuing orders and countermanding them, and now he pauses to light a well-earned cigar and snatch a moment's respite from the labor of supervising Bertie.
Well, Bertie, how do we stand? Has that roast of beef turned up yet?
No, sir. I phoned the market, and they said the boy left with about a half hour ago. Maybe he's been hijacked.
Yeah. Well, we'll give him a few more minutes. How about the sleeping arrangements?
I did like Miss Marjorie said. I'm giving Miss McGee your room.
That's right.
And Mr. McGee gets the den. I hope he'll be comfortable.
He doesn't have to be comfortable. That guy can sleep standing up. What about me? Where do I go?
Well, you sort of get the sewing room, Mr. Gildersleeve.
I know it, the sewing room. I'll be on pins and needles all night.
Oh, no, sir. I got you all fixed up snug there on Leroy's folding camp cot.
Yeah, the last time I camped on that cot, it folded all right. You remember?
Well, I got it fixed up now, Mr. Gildersleeve. I got it tied up with some string.
Oh, fine. I'll sleep like a baby.
Yes, sir.
I'll bet I'll be asleep before my head hits the floor. Marjorie, is that you?
It's me, Marjorie's coming. She's outside talking to some guy that brought her home from a plant.
How was the movie? Bertie, take this book upstairs with you when you go, will you?
Yes, sir.
I saw a white cargo. It's about this guy.
Oh, good. Put that book on the table next to the bed, Bertie. Mrs. McGee might want to read before she goes to sleep.
It's about this guy goes to Africa, and he runs into Hedy Lamarr down there mooching around the jungle.
Yep.
So the heat begins to get him. Only I forgot to tell you, Walter Pigeon is there. He's running the camp. That's Mr. Miniver, only in this picture his name is Witzel.
Oh, hello, my dear.
Hello, are they here yet? So Witzel says to this new guy...
Not yet. Their train's due in about a half an hour.
So Witzel says to this guy... Witzel, that's Walter Pigeon.
Leroy, I haven't got time to listen to all that now.
Well, you asked me how was the movie.
I'll be more careful next time. You're early, Marjorie.
I got a ride, so I didn't have to wait for the bus. We picked up Leroy just as he was coming out of the theater.
Yeah, tell him who picked you up. Marjorie's got a new fella. Yeah.
Nobody picked me up. And I have not.
That's no way to talk about your sister, young man.
One of the men from the plant very kindly offered to drive me home, that's all. He was on his way.
Yeah, Mike, she calls him.
That just happens to be his name.
She's only been there working there a week, and already it's Mike. Hiya, Mike.
Hiya, baby.
Come on, now, don't you listen to him. Very nice, though, really. He works in the drafting department.
Oh, well, that's fine.
He's a draftsman, all right. If you ask me, he's got designs on Arnell.
Leroy, you mind your own business. I've got something to say to both of you.
Yes, Uncle Mort?
When Mr. McGee arrives this afternoon, there are two things I want you to be careful not to do. In the first place, I don't want you to make any reference to Fibber's size.
What about it?
Well, he's a little runt, and like all little runts, he's sort of sensitive about it. That's why he's so pugnacious.
Oh, I wouldn't say anything, Uncle Mort.
Well, I know you wouldn't, my dear, but I'm not so sure about Leroy.
Well, what did I say? Did I say anything about him being a runt? You're the one who brought it up.
Well, just don't, that's all. Actually, he's not so small anyway. Just that he's not as big as he thinks he is. He has the mind of a small man, that's all. Always carrying a chip on his shoulder.
Oh, we'll be careful, Uncle Maud.
And another thing, and this applies to both of you. I'd rather you didn't say anything about my engagement to Mrs. Ransom.
Oh, but the McGee's are your friends, Uncle Maud. They'll be offended.
We're not announcing the engagement just yet, my dear. We're keeping it a secret.
Mrs. Ransom isn't. I heard her talking to Mrs. Pettibone down at the grocery.
We're not announcing it to McGee, and that's final, Leroy. Because if I know McGee, he'll start making cracks. If he makes any cracks about Leela, I'll punch him in the nose. And if I do that, Molly will be upset. And if she's upset, it'll spoil the whole weekend. And that's what you get for inviting McGee anyway.
Yet. He hasn't had a chance to open his mouth.
Well, I know, McGee. His mouth is open right this minute. You'll see. He'll arrive here in the middle of a sentence. Nobody will be able to get a word in all weekend. If he ever finds out about me and Leela, he'll be like a Scotty with a bone.
Oh, Uncle Mort, you're being silly.
Well, he isn't going to come in here as my guest and bandy so-called witticisms at my expense. I'm not going to give him the satisfaction. We'll just keep the whole thing dark, if you don't mind. Come on, it's time to go get him.
Can I go?
No, Leroy. There's something else I want you to do.
What's that?
I want you, in the interests of peace, to go out in the garage, get the lawnmower, and hide it. Well, this is it, folks. It's no palace, but it's home to me. What do you think of it, Molly?
Oh, it's a lovely place, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Yeah, a nice hunk of property you got here, Gildy.
100-foot front by 175 deep.
Well, that ought to give you room to spread out. And I can see that you have.
What was that, little chum?
McGee, watch it.
Hey, Crocky, who lives next door there?
Next door? Oh, some woman. I forget her name.
Mrs. Ransom.
Oh, yes. Is that it?
Yeah. She's a widow.
Oh, so?
Widow woman, eh? Give you much trouble?
No.
As a matter of fact...
Marjorie, suppose you run in and ask Leroy to come out and help with the bags. That's a good girl.
You know, I think nice neighbors make all the difference in the world.
So do bad ones. We had one once who borrowed our lawnmower and kept it so long he finally had to leave town. And he took the lawnmower with him.
McGee, if you come all the way to Summerfield to open up old wounds... Oh, yes. Come here, my boy.
Well, this must be little Leroy.
Yes. Leroy, I want you to meet Mrs. McGee, a very dear friend of mine.
How do you do?
My, he's a fine-looking lad, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Oh, and this is Mr. McGee.
Hi, bud. Gosh, I had no idea you were such a big kid.
Gosh, I had no idea you were so big either.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you're not such a little runt. I'm told me
that... Leroy!
I'm just building him up, huh?
Well, cut it out.
Never mind him, Leroy. You eat your oatmeal and cod liver oil regularly. Someday you may be as big and fat as your uncle.
Are you kidding?
None of your impudence, young man.
Now, Gildersleeve, the boy meant no harm. He's plainly the victim of an unfortunate environment, that's all.
Well, let's go inside, shall we, where the environment is warmer.
Oh, yes, by all means. Leroy, you go get the bags out of the car. By George, I tell you folks, it's wonderful to have you here. This is just like old times.
Oh, it's good to be here, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Let me take your coat, Mrs. McGee.
Oh, thank you.
Where'll I put mine, Rocky?
Well, I'll take it. Just hang it up here in the hall closet.
McGee.
What, Molly?
You see that closet? That's what I mean.
Sure, anybody can keep a closet clean if they don't use it.
Mr. McGee, if you'd like to come upstairs, I'll show the room you're to have.
Oh, thank you, dearie. I would like to freshen up a little before dinner.
Dinner's in about a half an hour, everybody.
Hey, where do these bags go?
Mr. McGee's bag goes in the den, and Mrs. McGee's goes up in my room. Here, I'll take it up to her.
Hey, Sonny, is there any place around here where a fellow could buy a toothbrush? I came off without one, as usual.
Well, sure, there's a drugstore right down the street about three blocks.
Good, I may run down there a little later. Well, what have you been doing with yourself all day?
I went to the movies this afternoon.
Uh-huh.
White Cargo, have you seen it?
No, that's one I missed.
Well, this guy goes to Africa, and he can't stand the heat.
Uh-huh.
So he and Walter Pigeon get mad at each other, and Walter Pigeon says, "You'll quit." And he says, "I will not." Uh-huh. So he goes off by himself and plays the phonograph, and then he...
Well, look, on second thought, maybe I better go right now and get that toothbrush.
Wait, I'm just getting to where Hedy Lamarr comes in.
Oh. Well, I'll wait for that.
Well, he's playing his phonograph there, and it's getting all dark and spooky, and he looks out the door, and all of a sudden, what does he see?
Hedy Lamarr.
Yeah, only you'd never know her. Huh? She's got a sort of a thing around her, and she comes in like this. Look, you're Walter Pigeon, and I'm Hedy Lamarr.
Well, if you're Hedy Lamarr, I guess I can pass for Walter Pigeon. Shoot the plot to me, Tot.
Well, she slides around the edge of the door like this, and she says, I am Tondaleo.
Well, look, Roundaleo, I've got to run down to the corner and get a toothbrush.
Well, hey, wait!
I'll be right back.
Well, this is the best part. Witzel comes in and catches her.
Good night, Mr. Peavy.
Good night. Now, what can I do for you, sir?
I'd like to buy a toothbrush.
A toothbrush? Mm-hmm. Did you have any particular kind of toothbrush in mind?
Yes, something I could brush my teeth with. As a matter of fact, I don't really need a toothbrush. I've got one at home, but I came away without it.
Well, none of us perfect. You say you're a stranger in town?
I didn't say so, but I am. McGee's my name. I'm staying up the street here.
Yeah, pleased to make your acquaintance, Mr. McGee. My name is Peavy. Anytime I can be of service, only too glad.
Thanks. I'd like to buy a toothbrush.
Any particular kind? Oh, I asked you that, didn't I?
Yes.
Well, I have a number of varieties. I have them in red, green, white, small, medium, large.
Now, give me a red one.
And then they come in the nylon bristle, the Exxon bristle, the proton bristle, and... They're just plain bristles.
Look, Bud, I just want a toothbrush. I want to brush my teeth.
Well, here's a nice brush.
I'll take that one.
Well, I don't want you to feel I'm high-pressuring you. It's just...
Wrap it up.
Yes, sir. Will there be anything else?
No, that's... Oh, wait a minute. Seems to me Molly did mention something. Oh, I know. We're spending the weekend with a fellow up the street here, and I'd like to get a little something for him as a gift.
What type of gentleman is he?
Oh, he's a big, fat blowhard. Doesn't do much of anything but eat, sleep, and brag.
I've got something here that I think Mr. Gildersleeve would like.
Oh. You know him?
Oh, yes. He's in here almost every day.
Oh.
And I think if you really want to surprise him, a nice package of bubble bath would do the trick.
Gildersleeve in a bubble bath? Boy, he'd look like a blimp coming out of a cloud.
Well, of course, it wouldn't make much of a wedding gift, if that's what you have in mind.
Wedding gift? For Gildersleeve?
Well, haven't you heard? He's engaged to marry his next-door neighbor, Mrs. Ransom.
Throcky, engaged?
Yes.
Oh, tell me more, tell me more. What'd you say her name was?
Mrs. Ransom. Leela Ransom. Widow.
Oh, the widow next door. Uh-huh. The one he said he never met. Didn't even know her name. The big fake. What's she like?
Well, she's a southern lady. Very well preserved.
Oh, boy. Let me at him. Here, what do I owe you?
That'll be 77 cents.
Cheapest toothbrush I ever bought. Well, so long, Bud, and many thanks.
Ah, the plot thickens here, Lisa, on The Great Gildersleeve. You enjoying this episode?
I do. I like the music. I like the voices.
Yeah,
it's
well,
a lot of fun.
You know, Hal Perry as Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve is amazing. He left the show right in the middle of the run, right at the height of its popularity, to do a different show, which tanked. And a guy by the name of Willard Waterman came in and did that all the way through the television days. Let's take a break. We'll get back to The Great Gildersleeve with guests Jim and Marion Jordan as Fibber, McGee, and Molly in a few minutes. All right, welcome back to the show. This is the WGN Radio Theater. Thank you so much for tuning in. For a whole year, we've been on the air here. We hope it's many, many more years.
We're hoping.
Just don't get us in trouble or anything, Lisa, right?
No, I try to keep things on the level here.
Want management to like us.
Right. I'll try to stay in line.
Make sure, you know, the powers that be that we toe the line.
Yes.
Don't want to have any trouble.
I will keep us in order, Carl.
I want to have this radio show.
Okay, I'm on that.
When I'm 112, I'll retire.
Okay.
And that's 60, 70.
Just a couple of years from now.
About 70 more years we can do. Can you do this show for the next 70 years?
I can, but I might need a raise.
You know what? We have 100,000, 100,000 plus radio shows to play. So we could do this for the next.
We can do it, and then we'll start on a repeat.
We only play 6 a week.
Right.
So we could,
many more to go.
We can do this for, let's do the math. I'm not good
at
math.
Oh, you're not good at math.
See how many years we can do this
for. Go get
for.
Your abacus.
Well, 6 shows
do.
Times 52 weeks, that's like 312 shows. Is that right?
No, it's 350 would
wait,
be.
6 times.
350 would be 50 weeks.
No, it's 52 weeks times 6. That's 312 shows, isn't it? Isn't that right or
oh,
no?
Wait.
Did I do that right? I don't know.
312.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
Okay. So that's a mere
drop in the bucket.
Drop in the bucket. You took the words
so what
right
percentage
out.
Is that of the 100,000?
A fraction.
There you go.
Yeah, right?
A small fraction.
Very small fraction. So we have a lot of shows. All right. Gildersleeve. We've been tuning this in. Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve.
That's Philharmonic.
Yes, Philharmonic. Right. That's right. Yeah. Yes, very good, Lisa. The thanks. P is for Philharmonic. Yeah. Let's get back to this now. Part 2, the conclusion of The Great Gildersleeve.
Just then, Walter Pigeon comes in from the jungle and catches Hetty slipping him the poison.
Heavenly day.
Leroy, that'll be quite enough now.
Oh, now, don't discourage the boy, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Discourage him? I only wish I knew how.
Hi, folks.
McGee, where on earth have you been?
Oh, just down at the corner.
Say, you look like the cat that swallowed the canary. You know that you've kept dinner waiting 15 minutes?
Oh, that's perfectly all right. Leroy, run out and tell Bertie she can serve at any time now, will you?
McGee, have you washed? McGee, what's got into you?
Yes, what are you looking at?
Hi, Rocky. Yeah.
Hello.
How's every little thing? How are you feeling?
I feel all right. Why?
Everything under control?
Certainly.
What do you hear from Lulu?
Lulu? Who's Lulu?
McGee, what on earth are you
talking? When are we going to meet her, Rocky?
Meet who?
The Queen of Sheba. Scarlett O'Hara. That widow you're going to marry.
Oh!
Marry? Mr. Gildersleeve?
Leroy!
Honest, Unc, I didn't say a thing.
Marjorie!
Not a peep, Uncle Mort, I swear.
If you knew Lulu like I know Lulu.
Her name is not Lulu.
No?
No, it's Leela.
Leela.
Lee is in, leave her out of this, and La is in lots of people get a punch in the nose. That's just what you're going to get if you ever so much as...
Why, you big bumbling balloon. Come over here and I'll let the air
you
out.
Muscle bound Mickey.
Mickey.
Dinner.
Saved by the bell.
Well, it's Sunday morning, and the great man has come down to enjoy his usual outsize Sunday breakfast. He walks into the dining room sniffing the air like a bird dog in a hot scent.
That's funny. The stuff must be here, but I can't smell it. Bertie?
Yes, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Where's breakfast?
Why, Mr. Gildersleeve, Miss Marjorie told me y'all would wait until Mr. and Ms. McGee came down.
I never heard of such a thing. Marjorie!
We're going to take Uncle Mort. Now, be quiet. Think of our guests.
I am thinking of them. I'm thinking, why don't they get up?
Oh, the idea. Anyone would think you hadn't eaten for a month.
That's exactly the way I feel. And when I think of that little termite McGee, probably lying up there in bed right now, just on purpose to keep me from my breakfast. Who's that?
I'll go.
Judge.
Oh, Hooker, come right in. I'm glad to see you.
I can't stay, but I've heard the news from Leela Ransom, and as your ex-rival, I simply wish to tender my congratulations.
Oh, thank you, Judge.
After thinking it over, Throckmorton, I feel sure that Leela's heart has guided her to the right choice.
Oh, you think so, eh? Well, I hope so. By the way, I'm giving a little party for Leela this afternoon. I hope you can come, Horace.
I'd love to. I hope you'll make Leela very happy, Gildy.
Well, I'll try.
Fine. Throckmorton, have you given Leela any kind of token?
Token?
Well, as a symbol of your plighted troth. It's customary, you know, to give the lady
a... Hooker, are you trying to peddle a secondhand engagement ring?
No, certainly not.
Then what are you talking about?
It's not secondhand. Leela's never even seen it. This ring has never encircled a human finger.
Then why don't you take it back to the jeweler?
Well, for sentimental reasons, I wanted you to have it. Besides, I had Leela's name put on it.
Oh, well, what'd you pay for it?
$75.
I'll give you $50.
It's robbery, but I'll take it.
Well, I want to see it first.
Here it is.
Oh, that's quite a flash. Wait a minute. What's this inside of it, this inscription?
Oh, yes.
To Leela from Cuddles.
No, I forgot to mention that.
Hooker, did Leela Ransom ever call you Cuddles?
No, Gildy, but I just hope she'd learn to.
Well, obviously the ring is of no use to me, but I'll give you $25 for it.
$25?
$25, Judge. Take it or leave it.
I'll take it. But what are you going to do about the inscription?
Well, if I play my cards right, she might learn to call me Cuddles.
Yoo-hoo. Anybody around? Hey, don't tell me I'm the first one up.
First one up, your clavicle. I've been up for 3 hours. I waited breakfast for you till 10 o'clock. I'll tell Bertie you're ready.
Oh, I've had breakfast, if that's what you mean.
You've had it?
Yeah, had breakfast in bed.
You?
I tell you, it was quite a treat. Things ain't like that around Wistful Vista.
Things ain't like that around here, either. Bertie!
Yes?
Why don't I ever get breakfast in bed?
Because breakfast is the only thing that gets you out of bed, Mr. Gillespie. Well, maybe when you're mad, Mr. Gillespie, things will be different.
Yeah. You'll have to toe the mark then, Throcky. By the way, when are we going to meet Lulu?
The name is Leela.
Oh, excuse me. When are we going to get a gander at her? What's the matter? You're not ashamed of her, are you?
Look here, McGee. You're not even fit to...
Boys, so early in the morning?
Oh, good morning, Mrs. McGee. I'm just telling my little chum here I can't wait to have you meet Leela.
Well, we can't wait either, Mr. Gildersleeve.
That's no lie.
She's coming over this afternoon for tea, and I'm having one or two others in. Judge Hooker.
Oh, how are you and the judge getting along these days?
Well, we have our ups and downs. Some days I think he's our purest little jurist, and others I think he's a stench to the bench.
You know, I'm very anxious to meet him, too. He sounds like such fun.
Yeah, more fun than a goat. McGee, what do you say to a little constitutional before lunch?
A little what?
A little constitutional, a little walk.
On foot?
Why, sure. I'd like to take you out and show you the reservoir.
Go on, McGee, to do you good.
How far is it?
Oh, only about 4 miles.
Are you kidding?
McGee, I want you to keep away from Leroy for the rest of the morning.
Well, this is quite an occasion, quite an occasion. Everybody here now but the guest of honor. Where's Leela, Gildy?
Leela? Oh, she'll be along any minute, Judge.
You know, Judge, I've heard a lot about you from our friend Gildersleeve here.
Have you? I've heard a lot about you, too, Mr. McGee.
Well, I'll tell you what he said about you if you'll tell me what he said about me.
McGee, you're a guest here.
I've never said anything behind your back, little chum, that I haven't said to your face.
Oh, so that's the way you talk about me behind my back.
Oh, wait a minute, folks. That must be Leela.
I'll go on.
Hey, never mind, Leroy. I'll open it.
Don't
Leroy, you heard me.
Okay, okay.
You know, I can't wait to meet her. Just think, McGee, Mr. Gildersleeve in love.
Yeah, staggers the imagination. Boy, they're taking long enough. Wonder what's going on out there.
McGee, you stay right here.
Well, I just thought maybe he needed some help.
He doesn't need any help.
Okay.
Quiet, here they come.
Hey, looks like Gildy done all right for himself. Wonder what he used for bait.
Leela, darling, you know most of these people.
Oh, yes, good afternoon, Judge.
Good afternoon, Leela.
Oh, Marjorie, honey, I love your dress.
Thank you.
Hello, Leroy.
Hello, Mrs. Ransom.
Leroy. My dear, I want you to meet some old friends of mine.
We're not that old. Yeah.
Mr. and Mrs. McGee from Wistful Vista. This is Leela.
Oh, I'm just thrilled to meet y'all. Throckmorton's told me so much about you. I reckon you must think I'm just terrible carrying him off like this.
Dearie, I think it's the finest thing that ever happened to him. And I want to be the first to congratulate you.
Thank you.
Oh, isn't that nice?
Well, McGee... aren't you going to congratulate Leela?
Why should I congratulate her? It's Gildersleeve that ought to be congratulated.
Oh, you're just sweet talking me now, Mr. McGee.
Oh, shucks, sis. Just call me Fibber.
Mr. Gildersleeve, excuse me. Could you come out in the kitchen for a minute?
Oh, certainly, Bertie. Will you excuse me, folks? Go right on talking. What's wrong now, Bertie?
You know, I just can't get over Mr. Gildersleeve after all the years we've known him falling in love. Tell us, dearie, now that it's all over, how did he propose to you?
Yeah, did he get down on his knees? And if he did, who helped him up?
McGee.
Now, this is just between us women.
Well, it was terribly romantic and all. It was in the evening, and he came with a beautiful bunch of roses.
You hear that, dearie? Roses he brought her.
What's the matter? I bought you some roses a couple of anniversaries ago.
Well, I just wanted you to make a note of it. Oh. Go on, dear.
Well, I remember I just happened to be wearing a gown that he particularly liked. a flowered chiffon, very tight through here with a long flowing skirt. I'd been planning to spend the evening with a good book.
Go on, you'll get plenty of time for that later.
Well, we were standing there together, arranging the flowers, and all of a sudden, right out of the blue, he said, well, I don't know that he'd like me telling you, but he said, what would you do if I was to steal a little kiss?
Oh, my God. Is that corny?
Keep out of this, McGee. You don't understand. And then what?
Well, naturally, I tried my utmost to discourage him, but seemed like he just refused to take no for an answer. Oh, not only that, he started to chase me around the room. Throckmorton, I couldn't understand it.
Look, Leela, when did you first begin to suspect that something was cooking?
When he sang to me, just a little love, a little kiss.
Just a little love.
Just a little.
Is everybody happy? What's going on, folks? What's the big joke?
Nothing, Mr. Gildersleeve, nothing at all. McGee, go on outside till you can control yourself. Come on, get out of here.
I don't know if I hear any more of them. Leroy, show me where I get a glass of water.
Right out here.
Leela, what's wrong with McGee?
I don't know, Throckmorton. I was just telling them about our engagement and how you proposed to me, and all of a sudden something seemed to strike him funny.
Leela, is nothing sacred to you?
Now, Mr. Gildersleeve, don't be blaming her.
Is our romance nothing but a farce to be torn to tatters for the amusement of the mob?
Oh, no, Throckmorton.
Am I nothing to you but a laughingstock?
Oh, no.
Well, that's the impression I seem to get.
Now, listen, don't be blaming it on her, Mr. Gildersleeve. Blame it on McGee.
Huh?
And now, listen, remember, every proposal is sweet to the woman who hears it.
Isn't that a fact? Tell me, Mrs. McGee, how did Mr. McGee propose to you?
McGee? Well, dearie, McGee proposed in a leaky canoe.
Yes?
Which he had to paddle with his mandolin because he lost the paddle.
Oh, really?
Yes. And the song he sang to me was Pretty Red Wing.
Yeah, Pretty Red Wing.
Hey, this Summerfield water tastes a little funny, doesn't it, Gildy?
It does not. You can say what you want to about me, McGee, but Summerfield has the finest water in the country.
McGee, stop picking fights. You've made enough trouble already.
Who's picking fights? I just made a simple observation, that's all.
Well, you're a bad boy. Come over here.
Come on.
I want you to apologize to Mr. Gildersleeve. Go on, tell him you're sorry you hurt his feelings.
Okay, Throcky, old chum, I'm sorry.
Well, that's all right, McGee.
I know you're sensitive, and it's only natural. And I want to take this opportunity to say that where you're concerned, old chum, there's only one thing in this world I want.
Oh, what's that?
Just a little love, a little...
All right, McGee! Shines tonight on Pretty Red Wing. Well, it's certainly been nice having you folks here, Mrs. McGee.
Well, it's been nice being here, Mr. Gildersleeve, and meeting Marjorie and little Leroy and Leela and all. I think Leela's going to make you very happy.
Yeah, Throcky, she seems like a mighty nice gal.
Well, I'm glad you both liked her.
Well, goodbye, old chum. Thanks for the use of the den.
Oh, yes, I hope you were very comfortable there.
Oh, it was fine, but there's just one thing I'd suggest, Throcky.
Huh?
If you go to take a shower there, be careful.
Why?
You might cut your feet on my lawnmower.
Oh! Leroy!
Good night.
Good night, all.
Good night.
Molly appeared on this program through the courtesy of the makers of Johnson's Wax. Original music was composed and conducted by Billy Mills. This is Ken Carpenter speaking for the makers of Kraft Cheese and inviting you to listen in again next week for the further adventures of the Great Gildersleeve. This program reached you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
That was a lot of fun. The Great Gildersleeve right there from January 10th, 1943. A visit from Fibber McGee and Molly, Jim and Marion Jordan. We spotlighted Jim and Marion Jordan. They were, of course, Fibber McGee and Molly, and they had a long, long career on radio. When the show went to television, though, they were not cast as Fibber McGee and Molly on TV. I'm not sure why. I think, I think Marion had a lot of health problems a little later, you know, in the 50s and 60s. She had health problems, and Fibber did not want to do the television show without her. But radio, they were a mainstay for many, many years. A very popular show. I believe Tuesday night sponsored by Johnson's Wax, and Harlow Wilcox did the announcing on the Fibber McGee and Molly show. But that was the Great Gildersleeve. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.